Dang it. Never failed.
Senator, will please come to order. Roll call.
Roll call for Tuesday, January 27th. Anderson District 2.
Here.
Anderson District 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstetter.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Emmerich. Escobel,
here.
Geis,
here.
Hastert,
here.
Hicks,
here.
Johnson,
here.
Kinski,
here.
Landon,
here.
Meyer,
here.
Pappas,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Scott,
here.
Von Fladern,
here.
Wasserberger,
here.
President Nicholas.
Here.
30 present.
Thank you. Our pastor this week is Reverend Gilbert, who is in Cheyenne, was retired from the First United Methodist Church. Reverend Gilbert, if you'd lead us with the prayer, please.
May we share prayer together. Our Father who art in heaven, and yet as near as breath, we appreciate this opportunity to greet you in prayer, because in a minute we will say in our Pledge of Allegiance, one nation under God. We believe we are under you, not as servile slaves under a ruthless thumb, but as faithful servants under your redeeming grace. Not as under a suppressive heel, restricting freedom and rights, but as under a teacher, learning and developing. Not as under the gun, to be stressed and pressured, but as grain under sun and rain, to grow and be fruitful. As there is oneness in your Holy Trinity, we affirm a oneness in our nation of 50 states. We are grateful for those who had this vision of oneness and thought and fought to protect it. We do affirm as 30 senators to be one Senate. While we are not all of one mind, we are all one in striving to do what we believe best for our state and the citizens who reside here. So by the working of your Holy Spirit, weave our diversity into unity, our polarity into progress, for the well-being and wholeness of all. And it is to you, Almighty God, we yield our will so we may know your way. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January the 27th, 2015, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jeff Wasserberger, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Senator Wasserberger, if you'll explain to Nicholas Favor the importance of your chairmanship and your role in this committee. You can do that later on today. Might take you a little while. See, the doctor today is Dr. Behringer. I don't know if we've, the doctor's here. The nurse is Christine Colbrand from Weston County Health Service. Maybe we'll introduce them when they show back up. I think Yesterday, you were introduced to Nicholas Weber. Nicholas is my cousin's son. His grandfather is Dave Nicholas. I think the last time he served, Jerry Geist was president of the Senate, and Charlie Scott was member of the Senate. And after serving the Senate, Nicholas's grandfather went on to run for governor. The race was won by Governor Sullivan, ultimately, and then he went from there to serve as the Department of Defense representative to NATO when Vice President Cheney was the Secretary of Defense. When Vice President Cheney became Vice President, then Nicholas's grandfather served as the Department of Defense representative to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, the OSCE. They later appointed him as their ambassador to the Ukraine. And we lost him while he was serving in the Ukraine. I think you've already met Nicholas. Now, Nicholas, I understand you gave a speech, then ask him not to make fun of you because you're from Colorado. They're going to make fun of you, not because you're in Colorado, but because you're a Nicholas. So get used to it. Nicholas, we're glad to have you this week. Today in history, in 1920, Wyoming ratified the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. We'll start giving out the accession status. Today is day 11 of the proposed 37-day session. Tomorrow noon is the last day for Senate file drafts to be approved by the sponsor and returned to LSO. So if you have drafts, you need to get them back or get the green sheets turned in by tomorrow at noon. Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, if I could have privilege of the floor, please.
You may.
Mr. President and members of the body, I would like to have you stand and welcome school teacher Jeff Fuller and the Hannah Elk Mountain Miners.
Hey. We're at that order of business. Messages from the House.
From January the 26th, 2015, from the House of Representatives, message number 150, Committee of the Whole indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill number 46, NYXS Law, ayes 10, noes 43, excused 7. Bill has been indefinitely postponed. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from Standing Committee.
January the 26th, 2015, Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 68, Property Rights Ombudsman. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, and Ross. No, Senator Wassenberger. Excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman.
We're at that order of business. Bills on second reading. Senate File 3, second reading.
Senate File 3, right to try.
There are no amendments, no discussion. Senate File 3, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 29, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 29, Motor Vehicle Driver's License Exemptions.
We have an amendment. Senator Von Flatern.
I got to read it in.
Read in the amendment first, please. I apologize.
Senate File 29, Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Substitute Bill Number 1, page 3, line 6.
Senator Von Platen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 29. This is to the substitute bill. Make sure you have the right one. This goes into page 3, line 6. Delete and insert an and of all line 6. And under that, you'd put a capital A, has taken a skill test, or B, capital B, has submitted an affidavit. What this does is, right now, you could get, the way the bill is written, you could do an or. So you could have an affidavit from somebody that has been allowed to drive these larger vehicles, and that's all you need to do. Or you could do, if you cannot get an affidavit, you have to do a skills and written test. What this does is say, even if you have the affidavit, you still have to take a written. If you don't have the affidavit, then you have to take the written and the skills. So I ask for the Senate's favorable vote on this.
Any discussion on the amendment? Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, I think this is clarifies what the position was of the committee. There's a lot of discussion on that. The department was fine with the language as it exists. However, I agree with the sponsor that this clarifies it to say what exactly our intent was.
Question on the amendment. The question is on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 29. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 is passed the Senate. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Senate File 29, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 42, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 42, Task Force on Mineral Taxes.
There are no amendments. Any discussion? There being none, Senate File 42, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 55, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 55, Omnibus Water Bill Planning.
There are no amendments, no discussion. Senate File 55, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 63, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 63, Predator Ownership.
Senate File 63, there are no amendments. There's no discussion. Senate File 63, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 100, second reading.
Senate File 100, Prescription Drug Monitoring Program Amendments.
There are no amendments, no discussion. Senate File 100, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 101, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 101, Veterans In-State Tuition.
We have an amendment. Would you please read in the second reading amendment number 1?
Senate File 101, Second Reading Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 5.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 101. And fellow senators, we talked about the Standing Committee Amendment yesterday that changed quite a bit of the verbiage in this bill. And right away last night, we received communication from the regional representatives of the Veterans Administration, and they would feel a lot more comfortable if we changed the word dependent to individual. And, Mr. President, what that reaches in and captures is there are a couple of other populations that will benefit from this choice veterans in-state tuition bill, and not necessarily veterans, but Homeland Security, perhaps. So what that does, it's just a little bit more inclusive language. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions. If not, I'd call for question on Standing Committee Amendment, or the Committee of the Whole. Thank you.
Discussion on the amendment. There being no discussion, the question is, shall the Senate adopt Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 101? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Discussion on the bill. There being none, Senate File 101. Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 106, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 106, powdered alcohol.
Any amendments? Discussion? Senate File 106, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. That brings us to third reading bills. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Yes, sir, Mr. President. We do have a consent list. I move the third reading consent list, which is as follows. Senate File 6, Aquatic Invasive Species. Senate File 38, Controlled Substances, First Offense for Possession. Senate File 85, Adult Foster Care Pilot Project. Senate File 88, Emergency Care, Stroke, and Acute Heart Attack Patients. And Senate File 94, Substance Abuse Assessments, Non-Residents.
Would anyone like any other bills, any of the bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 6, Aquatic Invasive Species. Senate File 38, Controlled Substances, First Offense for Possession. Senate File 85, Adult Foster Care Pilot Project. Senate File 88, Emergency Care, Stroke, and Acute Heart Attack Patients. Senate File 94, Substance Abuse Assessments Non-Residents. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon. Meyer,
aye.
Pappas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Fladern,
aye.
Wasserberger,
aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 aye. Senate File 6, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 6, 30 aye. Senate File 38, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 38, 30 aye. Senate File 85, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 85, 30 aye. Senate File 88, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 88, 30 aye. Senate File 94. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 94, 30I.
Did you do 94? Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members of the elected Senate, Senate Files 6, 38, 85, 88, and 94 have passed the Senate. Senate File 46, third reading of the bill.
Senate File 46, fire demeanors, sponsored by Senator Geis, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senate File 46. There's an amendment. If the clerk would please read in the amendment.
Senate File 46, third reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 14.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd move Senate File 46, third reading amendment number 1. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'll go over to page 2 on Senate File 46, down to line 14 at the end, briefly talk about these. All this does is add some new language. At the end of 14, outside of normal agronomic or forestry practices. And then down on line 17, an insert behind the word spread that says, or conditions are such that the fire is not reasonably likely to spread. And then strike the remainder of that sentence on 17 and 18. This just kind of clears it up a little bit. The bill as it stands today has some new language, and the new language in there on line 15, to go from any woods or any prairie, and then strike in those words and add outdoors, it becomes a pretty large and expansive bill when you take in all of the outdoors. And so this amendment just addresses what goes on with ag. When your farmers are out there and they're burning their ditches or cleaning fence lines, maybe the borrow pits, trying to do a little bit of prevention or maintenance. And then we all know that our Forest Service and individuals use the fall and sometimes the spring seasons to get rid of burn piles or slash piles up in the mountains or even on private land. So they, outside of normal ag or forestry practices. And then down that new language on line 17, or conditions are such that the fire is not reasonably likely to spread. It just puts in that element of reasonableness, so that something to consider. I'd stand for any questions. I believe I moved the bill, Mr. President. Ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion on the amendment, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I guess my question is the interplay between Romanet 2 and the interplay in this section here, which is failure to extinguish or contain a fire outside. It seems like in Romanet 2, you don't even have to set the fire, and if it just passes from one rooftop to the other rooftop, if you happen to be the house in the middle, you're guilty. And this one here, though, it does have the condition that you have to light the fire to begin with. I support the amendment. I'm just curious about the interplay between Romanet 2, where it doesn't look like you have to set or light any fire. You can be a casual observer on vacation, and if your property's in the middle, you're guilty. I want to make sure that that's the case, and I don't know if there's any interplay between the sponsor's amendment, which I support, and Romanet 2, which I've come to have a little bit of heartburn over.
Mr. Vice President, if you'd come up, please.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Ladies and gentlemen, I guess on and against the amendment, and maybe this is appropriate for this. Well, let me explain. This is an amendment that has very stiff consequences. So when you look at what happens, for example, with controlled burns, we now have a statute that says the Forest Service has to monitor their fires and they can't leave them. And now what we're saying is, well, you can leave it if it's reasonable. That is, if you've been up a little bit late and you want to send your folks home, so that if you're a landowner next to a controlled burn and you've got a cabin over there, if the Forest Service burns it down because they all wanted to go home and they were hungry, you have no remedy. But if there has been a violation of statute, there is an opportunity under certain federal laws to have remedies. And each time you go in and you make an exception to say, well, as long as it's reasonable for you to have done that, you're free to go about and do your business. You can go home. You can send your crews home because they seem tired. Or we're not going to look at the weather reports and we're going to leave. And the next thing you know, all your property is burned down and you have no remedy. I submit to you that if you, in this day and age, if you set a fire, whether you're the state or the federal government, it's your obligation to stay there until it's put out. And there's no excuses. There's no reason to say, well, if it's creating these exceptions that you see in the middle of this new amendment is an exception that provides your constituents with no remedies when folks decide to leave fires that are still burning. I urge you to reject the amendment.
Not your chairman.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, on and for the amendment. If you don't adopt this amendment, you're just going to make every one of your state foresters that goes out there and routinely does burn piles on state lands or anybody in the logging business is now criminally liable for a $750 fine. The caveat here is with the amendment, and it says, are such that the fire is not reasonably likely to spread. It's an accepted forestry practice to go out there when there's 6 inches of snow on the ground and you burn those slash piles. And those slash piles may burn for 2 or 3 or 4 days, but there's 6 to 12 inches of snow on the ground. So is that unreasonable, and is there some liability associated with it? What you basically do is if you don't adopt this amendment, every logger out there, your state forestry people, they're in violation of this law. You have the same thing when we deal with agricultural practices. It's the same caveat. Or conditions are such that a fire is not reasonably likely to spread. If you light a fire and walk away from it and you got a red flag warning, there is a criminal action out there. You will be captured under the court system. So there's a provision in here. While it says for normal agronomic and forestry practices, you still have to do it in a reasonable manner, and if you don't, then you're captured under this bill. But if you don't adopt this amendment, be aware of what you're doing. You've just shut down the ability to conduct normal agronomic and normal silvicultural practices. We won't be burning any slash piles on state lands anymore, folks. I think it's a reasonable when you put the caveat on there that it has to be under those conditions where it's not likely to spread. On and for the amendment, Mr. President.
Senator Driscoll and the Vice President, please come back.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the amendment. It goes even a lot further than slash piles. Statewide, guys burn irrigation ditches. Every spring, we drag our meadows. You burn the twine and the stuff on them. And there's a reasonable expectation they do not burn. I've seen them get away before. Cow turd catches on fire, stuff happens, but reasonable expectations. You shut down a huge part of the operations and create huge amounts of liability. And this amendment makes it where the bill is workable within the ag community. If you're being irresponsible, there's still liability there. This is a good amendment that makes it a workable bill.
Thank you, Senator Driscoll. Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Folks, again, caution on this amendment. To my knowledge, I know of nobody that's been prosecuted under the statute, and the statute's been with us for, I don't know when the urge, I suspect it went back to the early 1900s, that the statute's been there. Not a single person has ever been prosecuted. But as it turns around, out now, that much of the burning that takes place in Wyoming is done by government agencies. And if when government, we have generally liability or immunity for government agencies, unless they violate the law, in which case you could have a claim for violating the law. And we have many instances where you have the federal agencies burning under circumstances that are not appropriate. And since they're federal agencies and they frankly believe that they have immunity, they send their crews home at night. Winds come up. The residents may say, hey, look, you need to have your crews there all night because the winds come off this mountain every night. And they get to the end of the evening, they're tired, they all go home, and they leave the fire. Now, the federal government and the forestry say that the Smokey Bear message, do not leave a fire until it's put out. You can leave a watch person. You can do a number of things to make sure that these controlled burns are not spreading. But year after year, we see controlled burns that are building, burning lots of private lands because the federal employees are leaving it. And now what you're saying is all they have to do is defend their actions by saying, well, we thought it was reasonable under the conditions. It's no different than campfires. We tell people you do not leave your campfires burning, period. And the federal government has many, many employees, and if they're set about the task of burning fires, they can leave a watch person, they can keep somebody else, and if it's a smoldering fire that's sitting there because the slash pile's burned down, leave somebody to watch it until they know it's not going to spread. Put out your fires. But if you're a private landowner next to federal lands, on whether it's brushlands or otherwise, once that fire spreads to you because somebody wasn't watching, your assets are gone. If it's a forest that's on your ranch, the entire thing's gone and you have no remedy because they thought it was reasonable to leave their burning fire. This is a dangerous amendment. And again, going back to the prosecutions, point to me one prosecution under the existing law ever made. But what it does tell people is when you start burning, you make sure your fires are out so you don't burn down your neighbor's property. And the federal government has that responsibility. And give them an excuse to say, okay, if you thought it was reasonable and you think your crews are tired, or maybe you didn't look at the weather report, you're free to go home and allow the fire to resume and burn down the neighbors because you weren't prepared to leave somebody to watch the fire. That's just not good practice, and it doesn't protect your constituents. I'd urge that you defeat the amendment. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, 59 for the amendment. Mr. President, I've had quite a bit of personal experience with fires, both natural and controlled. And let me just speak from experience for a bit. I've dealt with the federal government a fair amount, BLM, on particularly burning sagebrush and also watching them put out wildfires. And my experience is that federal agency errs on the side of caution. And I think it's unjust to accuse them of just sending their crews home because they you know, end of the day and they want to quit. They have been, at least in our area, Mr. President, super cautious. I have seen two fires that everybody thought were all the way out start up again. And in both cases, they were fires. One was natural well, naturally, I think it was caused by a cigarette out of an automobile from where it started. The other one was a controlled burn. In both cases, it appears that what happened was the fire, to all appearances, was all the way out, and it was left. And in one case, the next day, and in another case, 2 days later, a cow pie had caught fire and smoldered, and it was not visible. You cannot see those things. You can look and look and look, and you're still going to miss them. You think it's all the way out, and it starts up again. In both those cases, the fire got contained before it got off our property. But those things happen, and you need some kind of an amendment like this to protect. And for an instance, my understanding is the derivation of this bill was a prosecution up in Washakie County, which was well-founded, Mr. President, and the attorneys got involved and convinced a judge that some of the language being this changed in this bill didn't mean what it said, which is why you've got the broader outdoor language in. But it was a well-founded prosecution there, and it would have occurred with or without this amendment, because it was well-founded. But this one has the potential for making criminals out of a lot of innocent people, and this amendment cures that problem.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. On against amendment, folks, you don't have to look very far from here to see exactly what would happen. All you have to do is look down to Colorado Springs, a controlled burn. It ended up burning hundreds and hundreds of homes. And who was left handling those kinds of claims? The state had to come in. The state of Colorado had to come in and specially appropriate to compensate all these folks. It's a real thing, and I urge you to defeat this amendment.
Senator Hicks, for your second time.
Mr. President, members, we're mixing the discussion here a little bit. The scenario that the good president talked about is where the Forest Service is burning and it rolls across private ground. I would suggest you do that the remedy is already there. It is a violation of law. In fact, if you'll pick up the bill and you'll go to section 63105, subsection 2, this specifically addresses the issue where the federal government is burning. And I'm going to read this to you because this is where that is a criminal act. You will capture them. It says, allow a fire to pass from the owner's property, which would be this case be the federal government, to grounds to the injury or destruction of the property of another. There's two issues at play here. One of them is whether you fail to extinguish a fire or leave the vicinity, and the other one is if you have a fire and it burns off of your property under somebody else's. So the scenario just discussed is already contemplated in the bill, and probably the reason that there's nobody been cited under 63106 is because that wouldn't be the provision they would have been cited under to begin with. If it burns off of your property and onto somebody else's land, you would have been cited under 63105. So the idea is that this is going to somehow give the federal government release from laws of our state is inappropriate, I believe. So I think the remedy is already here. We can already, in those scenarios played out, cite those people as a misdemeanor, which puts them into the criminal court. So the remedy's already there, members. Don't mix up a fire burning off of one's property onto another with the ability to leave a fire if it's reasonable that it's going to go out by itself. Those are two different issues. Stand for the question, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, would request a favorable consideration of this amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? Back to the sponsor for a second time, Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, just a question. The presentation was my first time, and this is my second?
Yes.
Okay. In answering a question posed by the President, give an example, if it's ever happened before. We did have an example up in our community gentleman was out burning his trash pit in a barrel, thought it was out, believed it was out, went indoors after a while, and a gust of wind came along and found a spark and pushed it up, and it went into the forest. And yes, there was a, if I remember right, there was a citation and quite a bit more. So that does happen. And when we think about the federal example, if we liken ourselves or liken back to the some of the discussions we've had about passing bills that would incarcerate federal agencies when they broke the law, and then I'd ask you to remember there was a Wolf team out there that was doing a study that was charged with trespass, and the feds, once the charges were filed, they came in and swooped up the charges and converted it and dismissed it. And so you have to be careful on not jumping too far out there. This amendment adds language here that identifies that ag in Wyoming is a business, and there are things that go on. And, you know, people burn. I'll use the example of our neighbor, one guy who's now running a lot of land. He's able to do that with machinery. There isn't a lot of help around anymore. But when he goes to burn the fields and the ditches out, he picks the right day, and then he starts burning, and he'll burn for, you know, different fields spread out over a mile. And when you look at this language, if there was a problem, he's just out doing his business, and the fire inspector, the fire marshal came around, they could probably cite him for not being right there watching one field while he's off lighting another field. Or even if there wasn't a problem, he was out of sight on his four-wheeler lighting the next field. So this is an issue for us. And that ability to work in reasonable, I don't think it closes all the doors. It just says we can have a conversation about the totality of the circumstances. Ladies and gentlemen, if you decide not to support this amendment, I'd urge us to be very cautious, because the new language in here, outdoors, when you open your door, that's outdoors. It's the rest of the world. And that is a big expansion. I'd encourage you to vote for the amendment.
Question is on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 46. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment's been adopted. We're back on the bill. Discussion on the bill. There being none, roll call.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader. Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel. Geis. Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
No.
Rothfuss. Scott.
Aye.
Bonfladen.
Aye.
Wasserberger.
Aye.
President Nicholas.
No.
Closing vote.
Hicks, aye to no.
Hicks, aye to no.
Burns,
aye to no.
Barnard,
aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 21 aye, 9 no.
Senate File 46, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the Senate, has passed the Senate. Senate Joint Resolution Number 3.
Senate Joint Resolution 2, Investment of State Funds, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee. be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
The bill is read incorrectly as Senate Joint Resolution number 2. Is there any discussion on the joint resolution, which requires a two-thirds of membership required for passage? No discussion? The question is, shall Senate Joint Resolution number 2 pass the Senate? The Chief Clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Escobel? Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kinski?
No.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Fladern?
Aye.
Wasserberger? President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 27 aye, 3 no.
Senate Joint Resolution number 2, having received the affirmative or the two-thirds vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate Joint Resolution 2 has passed the Senate. Any other messages? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business. Bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor first?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. President. Member of the Senate, I'd like to introduce to you the new president of Central Wyoming College, Chris Valdez. He's sitting up here in the balcony to my right. We got him down from Montana and other places, and I'd like to have you welcome him to the Wyoming Senate. Mr. President.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself in the committee of the whole to discuss bills on general file.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion is carried. Today we call on Her Majesty the Reverend Senator Kraft to come to the desk. You get to decide your own protocol.
Tiara in place. Yeah. Okay, that's enough, Tiara. The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senator Christensen. Absolutely.
Members of the Senate, we have gracing our presence today up in the balcony two of the finest county clerks in Wyoming, from Teton County, Sherry Daigle, and from Sublette County, Mary Langford. Please welcome them here today.
First bill for our consideration is Senate File 57. The reading clerk will read the Senate file.
Senate File 57, School Facilities Appropriation, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Cole, Dockstader, Pappas, and Rothba, Senator Cole, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, who reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wassenberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Cole.
Chairman, move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with the do pass recommendation on Senate File 57. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Would the reading clerk read the amendment?
Senate File 57, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 6, line 21.
Madam Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment and a brief explanation of the Standing Committee Amendment. We had some errors that were made in initial drafting. As you can see, we transposed a couple of numbers. That's all it does is correct that. Ask for the body's positive vote on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File Number 57, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. We are back on the bill. Senator
Madam Chairman,
Cole.
Defer to Senator Landon for an explanation of the bill.
Senator Landon.
Madam Chairman, thank you. Fellow Senators, Senate File 57 is the result of work by your Select Committee on School Facilities, which I chair on your behalf, and it is brought to you by your Appropriations Committee. It represents the work over the last interim and incorporates a supplemental budget request of the School Facilities Commission and the School Facilities Department. Before we get started, Madam Chairman, I do want to commend to your attention a couple of handouts that I provided for you. Anytime we talk about school facilities, there's always an interest in what specific school we are talking about when we make reference, and so there is a handout that every school that is mentioned, every school district, you'll find right here that specifies exactly what school that is within that district. So you can look up the schools, your favorite schools out there. And then there's also an attachment that has the colored blocks on the front. That will specify for you exactly what security projects we are talking about when we come to that section in the bill. So I wanted to be sure, Senators, that you had that information. You know, just as a general comment to get started this morning, Madam Chairman, school facilities has been an effort by this body over the past 6 or 8 years to really get some schools on the ground out there. In terms of capacity and condition, we've come a lot of miles. School Facilities Department, by the way, manages approximately 1,600 separate buildings consisting of 25 million square feet across the state of Wyoming, with the majority of the square footage being educational facilities. 408 of those buildings are educational facilities. And over the last 12 years, this body and the state have invested over $3.5 billion in these schools. So that's a little bit of a backdrop for the newer members and a reminder to those of us who have sat in here for a while that all of those monies that we have put into those school districts out there, folks, that's money that didn't have to come out of property taxes at the local level. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about 57. You might recall, fellow senators, that last year the legislature moved away from an annual budget request to a biennial budget request, and we appropriated $290 million in total for the construction of Wyoming schools, and that includes CapCon and design and planning, and the unanticipated funds that we'll talk about here in a minute. and that is exclusive of major maintenance. Largely, this bill in front of you, senators, eliminates the requirement for legislative authorization prior to the expenditure of funds made July 1st, 2015. As previously appropriated 2014, it identifies specifically the projects that will move forward and the proposed budget for each of those projects. In addition, the general references to districts contained in the 2014 legislation have been removed because the projects are now identified so that the Director of School Facilities has summarized the process used to identify those projects. This bill requests an additional $13.9 million for school capital construction, and we'll come to that at the end of the bill as well, Senators. The requests for additional funds are for capital construction, for component-level projects, and for some unanticipated costs, along with a study, a modest amount of money set aside for a study that your school's facilities committee is recommending to you. The specific request for additional funds will be identified, Madam Chairman, as we walk through the bill. And so I will do that, fellow senators. If you go to pages 2 through 4, this is where we incorporate the supplemental budget request and the funds appropriated by this bill into the definition of the condition needs index priority and into the schedule of deployment for projects. If you go on over to page 4, we'll move fairly quickly through this, Madam Chairman, because I want to get through the bill and have an opportunity for fellow senators to ask any questions they might have, specific or otherwise. But if you go to page 4, line 16 through page 6, line 17, this eliminates the requirement for legislative authorization. Again, we authorized in 2014. We now have scheduled to deploy these projects, and in this case, it's the $250,000 previously appropriated for planning, and lists the specific projects and budgets requested by the department under that heading. If you go to page 6, line 19 through page 8, line 11, this again eliminates the requirement for legislative authorization to expend the $6 million previously appropriated for design, and lists the specific projects and budgets requested by the department. You might note here that the asterisk denotes funds that have been appropriated by prior budgets for a specific project. Again, page 8, line 13 through page 10, line 11, this is a request for an additional $3.1 million. $224,000 total for the 15-16 biennium for capital construction. And this is specific, fellow senators, for Carbon District 1, a high school project. We ran into a substantial amount of asbestos over there, and so that's what that appropriation is all about. If you go to page 10, line 13, through page 11, line 16, again, eliminates the requirement for legislative authorization to expend the $500,000 previously appropriated for demolition, and lists the specific projects right there for you and the budgets requested by the department. Page 11, line 18 through page 12, line 18, eliminates the requirement for legislative authorization for $750,000 previously appropriated for land acquisition. And it specifies the funds will be available for land acquisition for Albany County School District Number 1. Page 12, line 20 through page 14, line 5, eliminates the requirement for authorization, and that's the $1 million previously appropriated for ancillary building projects, and lists the specific projects and budgets requested by the department. Page 14, line 7 through page 15, line 16, this is a request for an additional $4 million. That brings to $10 million total for the 15-16 biennium for component-level projects. And these funds are allocated to an existing project and identify an additional 6 projects for these component funding. Page 15, line 18 through page 21, line 20, allocates the $9 million previously appropriated for safety and security, specifying projects in a budget for a total of $7.9 million. And this, and we require the legislative authorization for the remaining $1 million. That was brought to you by your Joint Appropriations Committee, and it requires legislative authorization for the expenditure of those additional funds. Once again, that budget level, $7.9 million out of the $9 million that we appropriated last March. Page 21, line 22 through page 22, line 8. That's a request for an additional $6.5 million, and that brings to $24.9 total for the 15-16 biennium for unanticipated costs associated with the capital construction remedies. And that includes, fellow senators, such things as design, construction, demolition, the ancillary building, security and component level projects. That's the unanticipated funds that I referenced as a part of that total $13 million supplemental request. Page 22, line 10 through page 23, line 11. Section 2 requests the additional $250,000 that I referenced earlier for the School Facilities Department to conduct a study of capital construction funding provided by the state. Specifically, Senators, we wanted to have that study look at component-level project funding versus major maintenance funding. There are some districts which utilize one or the other to a great extent. A lot of districts out there do not. We want to get a better handle on what we're doing with component funding and with major maintenance funding. Page 23, lines 13 through 16. We make this bill effective immediately. A lot of these projects, fellow senators, are shovel ready and ready to go. And so you'll see a couple of references in this bill that we say, let's get started right away with these rather than waiting until July 1st. Thereby, we could take advantage of the construction season. So that's a quick rundown through the bill, fellow senators. Once again, the overall request for the supplemental budget for school facilities is about $13-plus million. I can represent to you that that is the least amount since I've been serving with you in this body. That's a pretty modest supplemental request, being driven in part by the fact that these projects are running fast and furious out there. I want to commend the department and our commission, both of which have done a remarkable job of getting these projects out there and on the ground. They are running a little bit hot. We can talk a little bit more about that if you wish, but that's what has driven a little bit of that unanticipated cost. But again, I want to tip my hat to the school facilities department. They've done a remarkable job of keeping these projects going. Almost every time when the question is asked of a district out there, this is your project, and if you want, we'll go back and get you some more money. We'll ask for a further appropriation from the legislature. Every single time those districts say, no, let's work on this, let's try to get this within budget, and I think our school facilities department has done a remarkable job for us on that front. So pretty modest request. It does incorporate those security projects, fellow senator. You remember last March we had a pretty significant discussion about school security projects, and it was the determination by the Senate at that time that we wanted to expedite and get that $9 million on the ground in a hurry. Once again, school facilities and your commission has done a lot of work to get those projects identified so that we can get them on the ground. They're ready to go, and it's been specified in the bill at the request of the Appropriations Committee, so you can take a look individually at each one of those projects. Again, they are spelled out, and there's a good descriptor of those projects in the handout that I provided to you. Madam Chairman, I'm going to stop there. That's a quick, lots of information that I threw out there, and be happy to try to answer whatever questions senators might have. Thank you.
Discussion, Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. If the sponsor could have some further discussion, and one of the issues that we all know about is the Coley's bonus money payments going away in, I believe, 2018, and which, of course, primarily funds our school capital construction.
and the impact of that relative to our budgeting. And then, and I know that we have a lot of money out there that's been appropriated and a lot of projects, and my colleague from Natrona County talked about how they're working and getting those out. But I want to be sure we're not competing against ourselves by trying to put too many projects out at the same time. Then the last thing, Madam Chairman, is a security issue. And I know that was money we appropriated in the previous budget session. You know, that's sort of like an unknown quantity out there. And maybe we could have some more discussion about how much are we really looking at and how far do we go? Are we picking the low-hanging fruit right now? To what extent can we expect to see this be come back with more and more and more money being spent? And, of course, with less and less money available, how are we going to deal with that?
Further discussion? Senator Landon.
Well, thank you. Madam Chairman, very good questions by our majority floor leader, and spot on. And in fact, reflect a lot of the conversations that we had during the interim. We all know that these coal lease bonus monies are going away. That's how we, for some of our junior members of the Senate, that's how we've been funding all of these projects, is with coal lease bonus money. We know that's going to be going away. As for the 2018 figure, it's kind of interesting that because of our efforts, the way we've been pushing forward on schools, I can submit to you, senators, that we're kind of nearing the end of this big push in terms of capacity and condition. And it is about 2018 that if we push through at the level that we're pushing, we're going to reach the end of our efforts to get those school buildings up to snuff out there. Now, does that mean that we're not going to have to build new school buildings? No, it does not. We're still going to have capacity issues. But the good news is we've reached about the 15-yard line. We're in the red zone in terms of getting these facilities taken care of out there. And I hope that the legislature can find a way to push this on through. We've done a remarkable job over the last decade, senators, in getting these schools on the ground. So that's the conversation about how do we go forward. Do we go ahead and push through to 2018, upon which time your school facilities appropriation is going to fall by about half. Because what's going to happen is we're going to move away from capacity and needs and more into a mode of asset preservation. We're going to be shifting our attention to taking care of the buildings that we've already put on the ground. And that's a lot cheaper process than putting brand new schools out there. So it's about that time frame, 2018-19. That's about when that's going to take place if we keep the level of funding where we have it. We'll have to make that decision next year. As for competing against ourselves, the fact is we are a little bit out there. Some of these projects are running a little bit hot. In fact, we've had testimony that about 50% of the projects that are bid out there are running a little bit hot. And that's what's driving that unanticipated budget and why we've come back to the Senate for a little bit more appropriation. If you look at, you know, we hear all the time that we get this unreasonable competition from out of state. But if you look at these projects and you take a look at who the general contractors are, we're in pretty good shape out there. It's our contractors doing the work. And because of the work of the school facilities department, I think, generally speaking, we're pulling these projects back into pretty good line with what makes sense. So competing against ourselves, I think there's a little bit of that. You know, we went from 2 or 3 years ago. I think the vehicle, I described it this way in front of committee, I think we had it stuck in compound low, and now we've shifted up into some higher gears. So, yeah, these projects are coming out, pretty quickly. Regarding these security projects, I would just say again that we had a pretty good conversation last March about security funding. And it was all prompted by the unfortunate circumstances that we run into across the country now, and that is that we have had some real tragic incidents take place in schools across the nation. It was the feeling at that time here in the Senate that it was time for us to really get started in a big way and in an intentional way to get some security projects on the ground. This was a little bit of an expedited process to identify those projects. They came out of the component list. And I would submit to you that there's probably projects just like them out there waiting for us to address. To use the words of the majority floor leader, this is a little bit of the low-hanging fruit. These are the projects that were ready. They were identified as security projects. And they are the kind of projects that I think we would all agree that we really probably need to address in our schools out there. Single entry points, vestibules, you know, to protect the front end of our schools, some video cameras, those sorts of things, locks on doors. Some of that can be taken care of with component funding and major maintenance. That's why we want to take a look at how are we funding component funding and how are we addressing major maintenance. So that's a quick answer to all three of those. I would invite you have a couple of members of your school facilities committee, and they may have something they'd like to add, but I hope that in part answers the questions of the majority floor leader. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just to take a moment in support of what you've been told and compliment the presenter on a wonderful presentation on a very difficult subject. As a matter of information that I would offer to the body, I'll read just a small excerpt from a letter that we got from Mr. Panos in regard to school facilities. He says, during a recent hearing of the Senate Education Committee, the School Facilities Department was asked to provide some additional information regarding the status of all school construction projects, as well as specific information. Having been a past member of the School Facilities Committee, I felt at that time, or at least I experienced some frustration in being able to see the bigger picture. There were many, many projects put into a pipeline of funding over time, and it was really difficult to track that funding and to really see what's going on. So at that time, I asked that they start trying to put some information together so I and others could better visualize this project and flow of funds and how that worked together. Well, anyway, in regard to the letter, Mr. Panos says, please find an attached comprehensive project status and time forecast. This chart contains a large quantity of information for school construction projects that have been appropriated for planning, design, and or construction. I'll simply say, be careful what you ask for. You may get it. And I got it. And I'm very appreciative of it. But this then becomes a chart of those projects, giving you some idea in regard to the number and then the magnitude and the flow of those funds. Now, this obviously does not lend itself to circulation. I'll say that several of us members of the Joint Committee and whatnot have this, and if you would like to look at it, we would certainly make this for your disposal. But for me, and I would say to Mr. Panos, thank you very much. It's very revealing to me, and it helps illustrate at least a portion of a $1 billion project and how that works its way through the system. So they call it the albatross. I'll not hang this around my neck, but again, it does offer you, and I offer to you, a bit of a picture of what's transpired over time and what to project of the upcoming projects into the future. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Further discussion? Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, just one question. We all know what's happening to our state's finances. If it becomes necessary in the future to put the brakes on, slow these things down, take a harder look at the projects, and take the other steps necessary to keep our spending within what we've got available, do we have those mechanisms in place so that we can do that if we have to? And particularly, you know, we're removing a bunch of, you need legislative authorization to expend, It didn't sound to me like that would affect that kind of circumstance any at all, but I would like to be reassured on that prospect.
President Nicholas.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. With respect to the accelerated rate that we've been spending, when you go back to the beginning of the Campbell County cases, if you look at the $1.5 billion or so amount of construction that we engaged in, it was a massive amount of construction, and in some instances we made the choice to build new facilities when other facilities may have been adequate. We began the process about 3 to 4 years ago, or even longer, but more serious in the last 4 years, of trying to sort out what is the continuous amount that the legislature should be prepared to pay on a given year and biennium to maintain the assets. And in doing that, part of the exercise is to inventory what the total value of all your assets are statewide, inventory your buildings, and then make a determination of how much you would spend a year to maintain those assets in good condition, and then you have the replacement as a separate issue, but part of that. So at any given time, the issue is to maintain this inventory of assets, do we need to spend $100 million, $200 million, $400 million a year just to maintain your assets so that you're not creating too much deferred maintenance and you're replacing your assets? These all buildings do have lifespans. In general, we tried that. So under the prior administrator or director of the SF School Facilities Department, we had done an analysis of all the assets and came to the conclusion that you should be able to maintain these assets once we've caught up on all the deferred work that had accumulated prior to the Campbell One, that we are reaching that goal, and when we reach it, we ought to be able to maintain it at about $200 to $400 million per year. And so that's really two questions. One is, at what point have we caught up on the replacement, and then do you get into a regular recycle or processing of buildings? We believe that we're there within a couple of years. In other words, we believe that all the buildings that were that needed to be replaced because they had structural elements have been replaced. We are now doing elective buildings, but we're paying attention to keeping a continuous process of improving the replacing buildings so that you never accumulate a large backlog. And we believe that we will plateau at about somewhere between $200 to $400 million per biennium in that range. And that is an exercise that we are working towards. Counsel that we could probably hit that number under the present director. It's not so fast. It's more complicated than that because there's so many elements that go into that model. So the good news is we are at the process of the money's not the construction that's done, but the money that's already in the budgets previously that have been appropriated that will take 5 to 6 more years to deploy. Those will take care of all of the most serious issues. And at that point, we start looking more at a maintenance level. But at a maintenance level, you do want to make sure that you're in a continuous process of replacing buildings as they appear so that you don't create the backlog. Now, another caveat to all of this is what about capacity? If we have communities that all of a sudden have extreme growth and we have to deal with that, it's harder to predict those capacity buildings. And that discussion, if you spend a lot of time, if you take it, for example, to Laramie County, the issue has always been, are the number of schools deliberate in order to keep classroom sizes large so they keep more money for teachers, or would they actually like to have smaller classrooms, which drives up facility costs, which drives down their operating dollars so that they'll have to pay less per person? It's a complicated issue, but in general, I think the consensus is of the committee, we have reached that point of stability, and from here on, it's maintenance and regular replacement. And the large expenses that we've paid, that we will not see those in the future.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I just wanted to follow up on a couple of the points the President made about the modeling and the fact that the School Facilities Department did work with the university and put together effectively a model projecting expenses into the future, recognizing what the current inventory was of buildings that needed to be replaced, and then what the major maintenance was going to be over time. And I can distribute that electronically to anybody in the body who's interested in that. It also should be publicly available through the School Facilities Department, so we can make sure that that's available. But what it comes down to, Madam Chairman, is that in 15-16, we've obviously got that budget right now. 17-18 is another year with a similar budget to what we've got in the 15-16 biennia, so in the $400 to $500 million for the biennia range, that includes the major maintenance. And then thereafter is when it would go into the maintenance phase that the President was talking about, where the projections are around $200 million per year, most of which is actually in the major maintenance realm, going to the preservation phase instead of the new capitalization phase. And then it incorporates the concept of continued school district growth, and therefore we're going to need some capacity replacements. The model also tries to anticipate when the replacement would be for those buildings. So we on the School Facilities Committee have been struggling to try and get to the point where we're at that steady state approach, and we've got a continuous expenditure requirement over time instead of this catch-up game that we've been playing over the years, but it dramatically decreases the total expenditures from the $400 to $500 million per biennia that we're looking at right now down to around $200 million per biennia, and then continuing that over time with modest adjustments based on capacity. That needs to be compared to what the Majority Floor Leader was talking about, which is the potential for additional income in the future. Most of the income that we've been bringing in is in terms of coal lease bonuses. In the 15-16 biennia, those coal lease bonuses are going to amount to about $436.4 million. In the 17-18 biennia, it'll be around $120 million. And that's all we have for scheduled coal lease bonuses at this time. So we do have some concerns, you can imagine, going out there into future biennia, where our coal lease bonuses are not going to meet that rate that we need of around $200 million a year, and we'll have to come up with an alternative funding scheme for that. So the near-term budget is secure. We have the funds available for that, going to the tall senator from Toronto County's considerations. But looking out into the future, we're going to either need to get some coal lease bonuses online pretty quickly, or we're going to have to come up with some other revenue streams. The continuous revenue stream for federal mineral royalties that's online right now going to this fund is about $26.6 million. So clearly, Madam Chairman, there's a pretty significant gap that we have to get to in our future policies.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and I appreciate the President, Minority Floor Leader, for their comments. I did want to try to answer the good senator from Natrona County with respect to some assurances. And, you know, I think, Senator, the best way to answer that is that not only do you have a select committee on school facilities which fully vets these projects throughout the interim and works with school facilities to understand on your behalf what we're doing with major maintenance and component funding, and you know what kind of adequacy standards do we have out there, because that's a driver, and you know, understanding why buildings are moved to the front of the list, all those issues. But then we make that recommendation and it comes to your Joint Appropriations Committee, and then it comes back through to your Senate Appropriations Committee. And so I do think that we have some stopgaps in place. Further on that front, Senator, we're going to undertake this study. If the Senate approves this modest budget request, we're going to take a hard look at what we do with major maintenance and component funding because of what the Minority Floor Leader alluded to. We're moving into a whole different time frame of what we're going to be up to with school facilities. I think that gives us the ability to rein in the horse if we need to. Obviously, if the funding picture remains, of concern to us, we're not going to be able to push through to the finish line like I referred to, and we may have to put that off. But I did one final thing, just to go back to the majority floor leader, Madam Chairman. I did take a look, and Senators, you're welcome to look over my shoulder at some point if you want to get a closer look at this. But over projects from 2010 until today, resident contractors versus out-of-state resident contractors on these building projects, 7 out of 32 of those projects went to out-of-state firms. 7 out of 32. Half of the high schools went that direction, and we can talk a little bit more about that at some point, but that's because those are big, big, big projects. But I'm happy to say that only 2 out of the 22 elementary schools that we put on the ground the last 4 years, 2 out of 22 went to out-of-state firms. 7 out of 32 total. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I hope that answers questions.
Further discussion? Ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 57, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 57 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 81. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 81, Lifesaver Program 2, sponsored by Senator Johnson. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs, which reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, O2, Emmerich, Escobel, Johnson, excuse, Senator Meyer, Senator Wayne Johnson, acting chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation, which reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wassenberger, Senator Ross, chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a yes recommendation on Senate File 81. And there are 3 amendments with it, and I would ask that they be read in now so when we get to the appropriate times, we can just launch into them.
The reading clerk read the amendments.
Senate File 81, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1 above, line 1. Senate File 81, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, page 1 to line 4. And Senate File 81, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 8.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and I'd like to do something unusual, start with a prequel and a privilege of the floor.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm going to introduce you to a young gentleman who doesn't remember pretty well anything about his childhood or even what he did 2 minutes ago. But he's been to hell, and he's come back to heaven. Several years ago, this gentleman was T-boned in a standard-sized car by a large pickup going 55 miles an hour. The truck hit the car directly on the driver's side. There was a lot of brain injury, as you can imagine, a whole lot of brain injury. Plus, the spleen was ruptured, the pelvis was broken in 3 places, and all of the ribs on the left side was broken. He was 25 years old. He was from Wyoming. He still lives in Wyoming, and he was a medical school student at that time. He's had a pretty rough life since then. He spent many, many, many months in a coma, and he spent several days with a flat brain line, but his parents wouldn't allow him to pull the plug. I bring that in to represent so that I can talk about the First Amendment, which I've been asked to do by many, many, many people. Kevin Monk is this gentleman, and it's incredible what he's been able to do with his life, and it's pretty horrible about what's been done to him and what's been taken away from him. And is my privilege of the floor, before I launch into the rest of the bill, ladies and gentlemen, meet Kevin Monk. Well, thank you, Kevin. Thanks, guys.
Senator Johnson, would you move the amendment?
Pardon?
Move the amendment.
Okay, now I will move the amendment. I'll talk about the amendment right now. It has been suggested, and I agree with it, that the catch title of Senate File 81 be deleted and we insert Kevin's Law in honor of him and in honor of where he has come from and in honor of I know where he's going to go because he hasn't stopped yet. So, if there's no questions on that, Madam Chairman.
All right. Senator Johnson, I'm advised you didn't yet move the amendment.
Oh, well, my apologies to the floor. I would like to move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 81. I'm doing everything backwards.
Thank you so much. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Johnson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Standing Committee Number 1 to Senate File 81. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 81 has been adopted. Senator Johnson, would you like to move?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. There's another Standing Committee Amendment. Oh, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 and the stand, and then there's a Committee of the Whole Number 1. And does protocol, okay. I would yield to the Chairman of the Appropriations Committee on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 and move it.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 81. Members of the Senate, what this does is it goes into the appropriation and takes the appropriation from $250,000 down to $125,000. If you look at your fiscal note, you'll see that or on page, let's just go to page 4, there's an appropriation of $250,000. But when you look at the fiscal note, you'll note that really all that's needed is $125,000. $1,000 at this time, and we would be back in a budget session and can deal with any appropriation at that time for the 2017-18 biennium. But this is $125,000. That's all that's needed at this point in time. And I'd urge your favorable consideration of Standing Committee Amendment Number 2.
Discussion on the amendment? Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would also urge your affirmative vote on this amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? Ready for the question? All those in favor of adopting Senate File, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 81, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 has been adopted. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. At this time, I would like to move Senate Committee of the Whole Number 1 to Senate File 81. As you look at the bill on page one, right down at line 13, you see, A, the Department of Health shall administer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The Department of Health wasn't quite comfortable with administering this bill if it's passed in the statute and the funds. So I went out to the Department of Homeland Security and talked with them and went over the bill, and the Department of Homeland Security agreed that this is more in their line of what they should be doing. And Committee of the Whole Amendment number one is very simply transferring the administration and the education of this bill from the Department of Health, who isn't happy about getting it, to the Department of Homeland Security, who wants it. So I would hope you would vote for it.
Further discussion on the amendment?
Question.
All those in favor of Senator Johnson's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment number one to Senate file number 81, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment number one to Senate file 81 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's been an interesting time period working on this bill and with this bill. I can remember just a few years ago when a gentleman, an elderly gentleman, left a facility in a snowstorm, and he could move fast. And it took them thousands of man hours hunting for him. And it wasn't until the snow started melting they found him a couple miles away. He had frozen to death during the storm. What the Lifesaver program is very simple. Those who are enrolled in it wear a bracelet on either hand, whichever they want. Hold up your hand, Kevin. Thank you. And it transmits. It transmits a specific number for them. And then the sheriff's department has the receiver. And the sheriff's department can go out with this receiver, starting in the area where they disappeared and then working around, they can find them. And nationally, the statistics are that they find them in less than half an hour. Now, if you look at the Laramie County Project Lifesaver sheet that was just passed out, you can see the type of clients that we have here in Laramie County. When we started, it was 58 clients. Now it's 37, and it's not just the elderly, it's not the Alzheimer's and dementia. A lot of the young children, youth, is that Down syndrome, autism, and of course, brain damage. And if I hadn't been wearing a helmet on my when I was cracked up on my bicycle, I would either be in the cemetery or wearing one of those bands, one or the other. I cracked the helmet in two places. So what Senate File 81 does is sets up a program and funds it where the Department of Homeland Security issues grants to the sheriff's departments, the 23 county sheriff's departments. Then they go out and train them how to use it, and the sheriff's departments administer the program, they give out the wristbands, and then they take care of the wristbands and check up on those who are using them. You can see on this document that they change the batteries and bands every 30 days and the costs that are there. What we have for the transmitters, the transmitters are $9,250, and the receivers are $1,850. I hope I got that right. If I didn't, I'll certainly let you know before second reading. And so the bill is very simple. The Department of Homeland Security would give out grants of $25,000 or less upon getting an application from a county sheriff's department. They would use up to 10% of that money to go out and train them on the use of the transmitters and the receivers. At the end of this biennium, the money will revert, and then the Department of Homeland Security will go in, tell of the successes and any problems if they have them, and ask for an appropriation for the next biennium. It is a simple program, it's an understandable program, and it has saved thousands of lives. They were asked, well, Kevin's mom and dad want to go to Orlando. What happens? They notify Laramie County Sheriff's Department they're going to Orlando for a certain amount of days. The Sheriff's Department contacts the Sheriff's Department down in that county with his number, and they plug that number in, and he's set for Orlando, Florida, and they can keep track of him there if he has problems. So it's a really worthwhile program. It's been tested out all over the United States and pretty well all over the world. And I would ask for your favorable vote on this.
Discussion on the bill. Ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Johnson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 81, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 81 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File number 90. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 90, Medicaid Chiropractor Services 2, sponsored by Senator Geis. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, and Scott. Excuse Senator Kraft, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so. The recommendation that Senate File 90 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Senate File 90, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 2.
Madam Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I move adoption of the standing committee amendment. Madam Chairman, the language at the bottom of page 1 and also in the title is chiropractic physician. The term that is currently used in the state does not use physician. There are several choices. We chose doctor. That avoids a nasty turf war we just didn't stay out of. And I would urge the Senate to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment, and be happy to answer any questions on the amendment.
Discussion on the amendment? Ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 90, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I would yield to Senator Geis for an explanation of the Senate file.
Senator Geis.
Madam Chairman, what this bill does is it goes in there in the section down in 42.4.103, authorized service and supplies, and we just added chiropractors, so if they treat these patients, they can bill Medicaid and collect the fee from Medicaid on these people. That's basically what the bill does.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, in committee, there was considerable discussion about the fiscal note, which I call your attention to, which shows that it would cost the general fund $969,800 and $687, that's a big cost. And like cost federal funds, it's a 50-50 Medicaid match, standard Medicaid match program. The we questioned the gentleman from the Department of Health that wrote the fiscal note at some length. It's based on a study that CMS did, I believe, with Medicare patients, but similar circumstances here. And what the study actually showed, it was, overall it was inconclusive, but it showed in several rural states, and I don't remember them all, but Maine was one of them, I believe Iowa was another, there were several of the rural states where, in fact, allowing the chiropractors in had reduced the costs. But there was a very large urban-dominated state, Illinois, where the reverse was true. When they let the chiropractors in, the costs went up. And so the health department regarded the study as inconclusive and just put in what they expected to pay out to the chiropractors and didn't allow for any savings because people were switching providers. And in some of these areas, it makes a big difference where a patient goes first. If they should happen to go to a medical doctor who's a surgeon first, they're much more likely to get an operation. It's quite expensive. Whereas if they go to a chiropractor, they will, you know, chiropractors can't do that sort of thing. You will get a much more conservative treatment first. So there's a potential for a saving of money there. There is some argument that the chiropractic treatments are more frequent than the medical ones, but you get the argument back and forth, and our judgment after listening to the gentleman from the health department that provided the fiscal note was that the conclusion, I don't think he was intending to mislead us, but the conclusion was wrong. And the best chance on this is that it's neutral or saves a little money. And, you know, it's always a risk. You let a new provider in, you're going to expand the services, you're going to get better choice. Now, there might even be a third choice that would be better, and that would be to allow the physical therapist in, but, and that's what we do in our general state law. But the federal government won't allow it because it might be a better choice and might be a more effective Medicaid program. The federal government won't allow it. They're just a hidebound set of bureaucrats at CMS. And this is the next best choice. So that was the consideration in the committee that led to us putting the bill out. It gives more choice. It may save a little money. And you vote it up, you vote it down, you're taking the chance any way you vote.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chairman, just a question. We changed the word from physician to doctor, and I'm assuming that that doesn't mean a PhD, that it means a chiropractic giver. And we don't have to go to a PhD.
Further discussion. Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I will take that as a serious question. Yes, they are calling themselves doctors of chiropractic. It's the typical grade degree inflation you're seeing all through the society. They aren't different from anybody else much in that respect.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've been working on this in the past, and it's time to make this change and to open up some more opportunities to provide the reimbursement. We feel like we have a compromise here with this name change and an opportunity to allow our chiropractors across the state in your districts to have this support. ask for your support of the bill.
Further discussion of the bill. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 90, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Senate File 90 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move
that the committee hold favorably. You sit again. You've heard the motion. What is your pleasure? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried.
You can leave that there.
Okay, I'll just leave
it. It'll be there when you get back.
Perfect.
I won't even take it.
Perfect.
What do we have? Reading bills? So standing, we have messages. Introduction. Let's go with introduction of bills. Senate File 122, first reading of the bill. If the clerk would please read the bill.
Senate File 122, Vision 2020, sponsored by Senator Nicholas.
Senate File 122 is assigned to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Senate File 124, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 124, Sales and Use Tax Enforcement, sponsored by Senator Cooper.
Senate File 124 is assigned to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Senate File 126, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 126, Water Quality, sponsored by Senator Hicks.
Senate File 126 is assigned to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. Senate File 104, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 104, Campaign Reports, Unopposed Candidates, sponsored by Senator Muck.
Senate File number 104 is assigned to Committee Number 13. Senate File 104 is assigned to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Senate File 121, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 121, Career and Technical Training Grants, sponsored by Senator Hastert.
Senate File 121 is assigned to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Senate File 123, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 123, Collective Bargaining for Firefighters, sponsored by Senator Kinski.
Senate File 123 is assigned to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Senate File 125, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 125, Incineration Permitting Location.
Senate File 125 is assigned to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Senate File 129, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 129, Medicaid Share Plan, sponsored by Senator Von Flatern.
Senate File 129 is assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor. Next item is messages from the House.
January the 27th, 2015, from the House of Representatives. Message number 152, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 35, Boards and Commissions Removal of Appointed Members. Ayes 49, noes 11. January the 27th, 2015, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading, passed, amended. Mr. President, the bill listed below, pass the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill number 31, Exemption Water Utilities, ayes 60. House Bill number 41, Barbering License Requirements, ayes 59, noes 1. House Bill number 56, Wyoming Food Freedom Act, ayes 60. And House Bill number 111, Resort Liquor Licenses, ayes 59, noes 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
The next item of business is reports from standing committee committees.
January the 27th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections Political Subdivision, to whom was referred Senate File 47, City Engineer's Duty to Estimate Project Cost. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Meyer, and Pappas. Excuse, Senators Hicks and Scott. Senator Meyer, Chairman. January the 26th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation Highways Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 97, Department of Transportation Communication Facilities. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Emmerich, Escobel, Meyer. No, Senator Johnson, Senator Meyer, Chairman. January the 27th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 103, Bicycle Pathways and Highway Separation. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Barnard, Cooper, Kraft, and Johnson, Senator Cooper, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that we stand recessed until 2 p.m.
Are there any announcements? Senator Geis.
Water Resources will meet up on adjournment this afternoon to take up Senate File 80, Trespassing to Collect Data Civil Cause of Action, Senate File 108, Access to Private Land Restrictions, and SJ 6, Sage Grouse.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet in 30 minutes up in S16 to have a presentation by our Department of Revenue Director Dan Noble. We'll be talking about exemptions.
Senator Ross.
Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet at 12:30 in S11 over by the Smoking Lounge to consider the following re-referrals. Senate File 56, Study on Transfer of Public Lands. Senate File 91, Charter School Eligibility Bonus Payments. And Senate File 92, Workers' Compensation, County Elected Officials. And if I may just have privilege of the floor for just a moment.
You may.
Members of the Senate, your Appropriations Committee, Joint Appropriations Committee, has finished its work on the budget bill. It is now in staff's hands, and they have a lot of work to do to get this bill ready, to get it to the floor. Problem is, that I wish to admonish you on is that because they have such work, they had already had 22 different requests for different kinds of assistance with regards to either bills, appropriations, or other reports. These guys, our staff is swamped. And so be cognizant of the fact that they are really burdened down. We're a day behind with regards to our markup. And as a result, they're working heavily and hard to make sure we get this bill out for your consideration. So be considerate of their time. Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet Wednesday, January 28th, 15 minutes after the noon recess in room S18 to consider Senate File 117, Air Quality Construction Permitting.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Management Council will meet today upon adjournment in room 302.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have an announcement with respect to the financial disclosures? Just a reminder?
That's correct, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a heads up for all members of the Senate, your financial disclosure form is due January 31st, and it's due in the Secretary of State's office, and if you don't file that, I'm sure you violate some kind of law, so please pay attention to that and get them in.
That means you too, Mr. Senator Peterson. I can see your eyes. Anybody else? Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, thank you. Your committee, number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow, Wednesday morning, 8 a.m. at room S1 to consider Senate File 77, Ignition Interlock License Amendments, Senate File 111, Summary Probate Proceedings, Senate File 73, Forcible Entry and Detainer Amendments, Senate File 75, Child Support and Enforcement Amendments.
Any further announcements? If not, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The motion has been adopted. The Senate shall stand and recess until 2 p.m.